Welcome to the March issue of the State of the E-commerce Industry Report, where we are going to be taking a deep dive into the performance across our industry for the month of March. As always, I'm joined by the heads of the data conglomerate here. Each of them are going to introduce themselves. So we're going to dive in to what has been a wild month in the e-commerce industry. And we're excited to share with you as much of the data as we can. We're going to give you teasers, of course, because we want you to go check out the next issue, which goes live Monday, April the 15th at d2cindex.com. Make sure you are signed up and it will be in your inbox immediately. And also, we now have PDF versions of all the historical issues when you sign up, so you'll be getting access to everything there. But let's get started by introducing the members of the D2C Index. To my right, Mr. Steven Recook. Steve, who are you and what data are you providing for us today?
Thanks, Taylor. I'm Steve Recook, analytics manager at Common Thread Collective. I'm looking at the survey data that we get from KnoCommerce as part of the DTCCI calculation. And I also have our own data set from statless.io. That's a great data set, around 300 companies, nowhere near as big as Yarden's that he has over at Varis.
Well, on that note, Mr. Yarden Shaked, who are you and what are you representing today? Because you're going to play an important role for us here today.
Hey, yeah, I'm Yarden. I'm the CEO of a company called Varos. Basically, what we do is we provide e-commerce businesses with benchmarking and market trends so they can see how they stack up compared to their direct competitive set and how things are trending. If they had an increase in spike, if they had a spike in cost, you know, was it due to them or was it due to the market, and understanding that and actioning off it. We have 6,000 brands on Varos and $6 billion of ad spend. So, you know, first party anonymized and aggregated data and, you know, the macro trends from this is what we're going to be talking about today.
Awesome. And finally, the Denver Nuggets mascot, Mr. Jeremiah Prummer.
Yes, I do like the Nuggets, as we were discussing earlier. Maybe the only person on D2C Twitter, except for Eric Farmer, who also liked the Nuggets. So I'm CEO of KnoCommerce. We work with about 4,000 brand or almost 4,000 brands who run surveys on our platform. And as part of that, we have different experiences in our platform where brands can participate in aggregate data sets. And so we're looking at a couple of different things here. As we have been over the past couple of months, we're looking at gifting moments and what the trends are and what the data tells us about what's coming up. And so Mother's Day and Father's Day are both coming up very soon. So we're going to be breaking down Mother's Day specifically this month, looking at some of the exact timing that we saw from last year, and hopefully give you some resources to help you really hit that holiday hard and do well with that as well. We're going to look into a little bit of data that we collected from a set of customers looking at the impact of ratings and reviews on purchase behavior.
Awesome. So I just want to outline one of the ways that we work as a group is every Wednesday before the publication of our issue, we all provide our data and we have a consistent set of information and metrics that we look at. And so before we have any dialogue or narrative, we begin from what is true, what happened from the information from each of our sources, and then begin to analyze that. We have a dialogue together, a pre-production meeting across all of us where we look at the numbers and we try to sort out the trend or narrative that's emerging from the data. And this is really important. The movement of narrative from data first, where we allow ourselves to be as much as we can informed by the information first. Now, this is hard, and we acknowledge this because we are humans. We exist in a world that has a bunch of signal that has already informed us about what people are experiencing throughout the month of March. We ourselves work in businesses that have our own experiences, so we recognize that that's the case. And I know you as a listener also have that bias as you walk in here. You have likely an individual brand experience. You have information that you've consumed. Maybe you've come across a Bloomberg article. I don't know. Something that may inform you about what you believe to be true. With that in mind, I'm going to give you a little teaser about information that I want you to just process as we head into this episode. So looking at Varos aggregate data for the month of March, platform one, and I'm not going to reveal which it is, CPM plus 6% year over year. Spend plus 41% year over year. ROAS down 3% year over year. Platform two, CPM plus 54%. Spend down 32%. ROAS plus 7% year over year. Now, I want you to think, based on what you know and believe, which is each platform? See if you can guess. And at the end of the episode, we're going to reveal it. But for now, we're going to start with Mother's Day because it is coming up. The time is now to make a move for mom. So Jeremiah, what have we learned and what are you going to be revealing to us in the D2C Index about Mother's Day?
So we are looking at data from 2023 to help us better understand what may be happening in 2024. So we looked at the question, who is this purchase for? It's the same question that we look at each month as we are looking at these different gifting moments in time. And when it comes to looking back at Valentine's Day, for instance, typically purchases, the shift that you see is in purchases for significant other. Mother's Day is different in that you have purchases for significant other rising, and you also see purchases for family member rising, right? So that's both, you know, I as an adult have my own money and can buy a gift for my mother. But if I am buying a gift for my wife on behalf of my children, you know, buying for my mother as a family member, buying for my wife is going to be a significant other, right? So you typically see a pretty large rise in both of those. And so what we saw last year was that the peak of, I won't share exactly what the peak was, but looking at when the trend started, we saw last year, April 21st, a Friday, was when the buying trends really started to take off. And that's basically that 3 weeks prior to Mother's Day was when the gifting started. So for us, that's coming up really soon. And so we're going to be breaking down a few of those different timelines. We're going to be looking at a couple of things too, some really actionable insights that you may want to take away from this in terms of how you should be thinking about the pricing of the items that you are selling to people at different timeframes. So we're going to break that down a little bit. But ultimately, what we want to be able to do is give you the ability to see like what the actual buying process looks like over that several weeks surrounding Mother's Day. And hopefully that gives you some ability to go ahead and take that information and apply it to your business.
One of the things I'm always amazed by every time I look at this is that things start a little earlier, but they last longer than I expect in terms of gifting. I think sometimes in e-commerce, we get stuck in the logistics framework of like, when can we get a product to a person? But the data tapers out a little bit longer than that. Is that fair to say, Jeremiah? Is there anything that you think is actionable for people as it relates to the specific period that you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Mother's Day and so when we looked at Valentine's Day, just kind of to recap that, we saw that the buying of Valentine's Day gifts carried through Valentine's Day, like fully through Valentine's Day. There seems to be a tail off a little bit faster for Mother's Day, but there is a difference in the way people are buying and the amount that they're spending. And I think that's something that we really want people to be able to take away from this as they dive into the data. The way that I would think about it is you may want your strategy 2 weeks before Mother's Day to look a little bit different than it does 2 days before Mother's Day. But in general, what we're seeing on holidays is that people will buy up until the holiday, even through the holiday sometimes. When I think about my own behavior, it makes sense. I am not a great pre-planner when it comes to these things. I would be lying if I said that I have never bought my wife a gift the day of, taken a picture of it and dropped it in a card. I think that's probably a common experience. So that's something that I think we just need to be thinking about. Like in to Taylor's point, we oftentimes think about things from in terms of shipping logistics, but that's not always the way that people buy products and the behavior of that purchase cycle.
Yeah, this awesome. Is one of the things that really, I mean, like it really surprised me looking at KnoCommerce data, and we went into Vero's data just to confirm. I mean, there's a lot of sales coming in. You know, last year Mother's Day was on May 14th, so May 13th and 14th, which probably is not getting there in time, mm-hmm. which is surprising. My guess is a lot of brands are even kind of giving up on that revenue because they're going up to the, you know, sales of 2 days before. And so, you know, there seems to be a play here of really leaning into and making a big splash the day of Mother's Day and the day before, even though it can't ship there, there's still a lot of sales happening.
Yep.
And as a reminder, this data is all gathered through the delivery of a post-purchase survey from customers as they through Knows platform. And That's a good setup for Steve coming to you on the project that we've been working on with KnoCommerce now for over a year, which are a set of survey questions related to consumer confidence. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about what are the questions we've been asking and what important milestone, both in terms of the length of this project, as well as the peak of this project that we just hit in March.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started off with five essential questions in determining their confidence on their own ability to purchase in the present or the future, the economy, and how they were looking at themselves as a spender or a saver. So we start off, the first question I believe we ask is, do you enjoy the value of saving money or seeing money in your bank account? Or do you see yourself, do you enjoy splurging? And that kind of, in a way, primes them for some of the other questions. So when we see a little bit of the responses coming in for these few other questions, you'll see kind of how that may affect it. And then, of course, we ask, do you expect to spend more in the present? Or did you spend more in the present month than normal? And then do you intend to spend more in the next 3 months than normal? And so what we found actually, and then finally, we asked about the economy. What do you see? What do you anticipate the economy being better or worse in the future? And we actually hit a milestone, as you're pointing out, Taylor. It was the most positive view of the economy that we've seen since we began this survey. This is 13 months of this survey now, completed a full year. And we've gone up to, it's still a pessimistic kind of view of the economy somewhat, but part of that is due to the order of the questions, I think. If you're asking them if they're a spender or saver and they say saver, and then they are kind of a little bit more, they'll view things perhaps as a little bit more pessimistic. So yeah. It might anchor them in the survey.
Yeah. So it's interesting, right? And I think I want to stay here for just a second, is that two things are true at the same time. This is going to be a theme, I think, for us in the month of March, is that one is that we have reached an all-time high for the over year that we've been running this survey in terms of consumers' perception of the economy, which is like pretty amazing, like really when you think about it. And I think this is one of the things that we hope to do with this little slice of data that we're building, is that we're looking at an industry view, right? So often in the general media, we're sort of competing against a broader narrative of all of America or all of the globe's view of something. And we're just trying to say, what do D2C shoppers think about the world? And so we've reached a moment where today, in the month of March, again, pretty interesting. We can unpack some hypotheses about why, but customers are saying that they are the most positive that we've seen them in over a year. But that actually is still a little cynical and negative. It's not that they are exuberant about the future of the economy. Is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely. That they're still minus 20% of seeing the economy better than worse, but I think some of that is because of the line of questioning that we're asking.
Yeah. And just to kind of jump in here a little bit, I think, Taylor, your point about the fact that we are measuring D2C shoppers specifically is really important, because it's not really a surprise, I don't think, to most people. But in general, the data, we've been diving in a lot more on the KnoCommerce side in terms of looking at demographics data and like what is the makeup of people that are buying products online. And that's something that we're continuing to research more and more over time. But what we see is that things like household income is higher than average, right? There certainly are lower income household shoppers that buy online with the types of brands that we're all working with. But the reality is that, like, you know, if like my D2C coffee subscription is going to be like, I'm not buying Cometeer, for example, if I am somebody who makes $35,000 a year, it's just not going to happen. I'm going to buy something off the shelf at Walmart or 7-Eleven. So I think it's a really important thing to keep that in mind, that this is a little bit different type of shopper, and they may actually view the economy totally differently than the average of the total US consumer market.
Yeah, awesome. The mix makes sense, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's a confusing time. I mean, like, if you overlay this to a stock market chart, the S&P, it probably comes close, right? Like, S&Ps are at all-time highs. Unemployment is very low right now. But on the flip side, you know, inflation's high. People are still, interest rates are really high. It's hard to buy a home. People are still jaded from, you know, past couple of years, the market's been very tumultuous and there's a lot of fears. going on. And so like, there's still this fear factor, but the other shoe hasn't dropped, but like the numbers are hitting that. And it's like, it's a very confusing time.
I agree. And if you dive into the DC index, another thing that Steve covers that fits into this juxtaposition is the relationship between inflation and discounting. So dive in to see what's happening in terms of how e-commerce brands are sort of handling the price issues that they're facing and some of the ways in which that might be driving some of the efficiency in acquisition. So that's a little tease for some of the depth of what Steve has in the episode for us. All right, Yarden, you started it. You teased out juxtaposition and the sort of challenge of sorting through what is happening in the world. Earlier, I gave a little tease of the platform data. Do you want to reveal what platform one and platform two are and talk about what we saw in the media buying and revenue world this month?
Sure. Yeah. So platform one is Meta. So Meta is the one where spend is up, you know, 40%+. CPM is only up 6% and ROAS only down 3%. I say only given, you know, you have to look at the spend increase as well, where TikTok was actually up over 50% on CPMs, down 32% on spend, and up 7% on ROAS. So different than what you may think and what you may hear. And I think that's the general view of what we're seeing in March. I mean, when we all got together and looked at March's data, we basically looked at it every which way, and we're kind of saying, I mean, this is a bull market. Like things are actually looking good. Like revenue growth for seven-figure brands, you know, is up over 40%. And for eight year over year, and for eight and nine-figure brands, it's up nearly 20%. So, you know, things are good. It actually, those revenue growths accelerated from what they were in February year over year. You know, people are spending more without seeing significant ROAS deterioration. You know, Common Thread's DCCI data is, you know, showing very similar things to what we're seeing in actual reality and actual performance. Yeah.
It's funny. So I feel in your voice, and we talked about this, that it's hard sometimes. There's almost, this is weird. It feels bad saying this right now. Like that's how I feel in this conversation, is that reporting this data is somehow an attempt to diminish the experience of people who have had struggles or something in some way. And I think you do a good job at the end of this of acknowledging that an aggregate data set is a composition of a lot of experiences. And this is important, is that there's a spectrum of experience that happens inside of a data set that we can both acknowledge and empathize with the people that are not on this side of the bell curve, right? And can say that, like, that's true too. There are people that are struggling. Is that fair?
Yeah. Totally. I think, like, you know, it goes back to the economic situation of, I think, you know, every business owner right now, including us, is like in their heads, you feel something in the air. There's some sentiment that's not, it's not very positive, right? People are holding their money tighter and things like that. But on the flip side, you know, on an aggregate, the numbers are actually good everywhere you look. And, you know, there are some amber lights and reasons for concern. And there's definitely companies being affected and being hurt and not hitting the numbers that they'd want to hit. And there's probably more of those than usual. But in reality, that's what happens every year. You know, like, it always happens that there's some companies that struggle, some parts of the market got hurt or got affected, or it's out of fad and things like that. And that's the situation here. It's probably a little bit bigger, but one of the amber lights that we're seeing is actually the percent, like, so overall revenue growth is strong year over year, but what's really carrying that is the repeat revenues in March. So, you know, new customer revenue is still up, but the big numbers that people are hitting is being driven by this return in revenue, which is, you know, in e-commerce, not necessarily a sustainable way to grow a business. You know, you can bring profit to it in the near term, but you need to balance both. You need to be filling the top of the funnel more.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, when I saw this data, I feel like I'm a bit of an outsider on the advertising side of things, right? Like, that's not really where I come from, where I operate. We don't even do paid ads at, at KnoCommerce in terms of for our own business, but we do measure it in a way that's different, I think, from, you know, what a lot of other solutions are doing. But I think, like, I don't live in the day-to-day of spending dollars on paid ads. And I think when I saw this data in a vacuum, if I didn't know what was being talked about on Twitter, I would have thought things were really good. But because of what was being talked about on Twitter and LinkedIn, I think we, you know, looking at that number specifically, Yarden, with the, you know, new customer versus return customer revenue, I did find that pretty striking. And so one thing I'm curious about, just for people who are listening, is that part of what you're looking at? Like, when you go out here and you say that your numbers are bad, is that partially because, you know, is that a difference of new customer versus returning customer revenue? I don't know. I haven't seen that kind of nuance in conversation to understand if that's what's going on. But I would love to know, like, just from people who are having these struggles, if that's what you're seeing, or if it's just like across the board, everything is down.
Yeah. One of the things I think is important to remember is that businesses get to their revenue in very different ways. I'll give you sort of an example. This past 2 weeks, I've interviewed two different brands on my podcast, this podcast. One was the Missouri Star Quilt Company. In any given month, 90% of their revenue comes from their existing customer base. Okay. Then I interviewed Loop Earplugs. Both of these are nine-figure brands, very similar in revenue size, but for Loop Earplugs, 90% of their revenue comes from new customer acquisition. Okay. If there's an issue on Meta, one of these brands is going to be substantially more affected than the other. And this is where, again, this experience of any issue in platform or otherwise is not evenly distributed. It doesn't impact businesses in the same way. And it's clear that the issues themselves aren't evenly distributed, right? So in a bell curve of thousands of businesses, there are inevitably people at different ends of these spectrums. And our job, what we're trying to do here, I guess I should say, not our job, but what we're doing with this report is to try to give a view of the market as a whole. That is very different than the individual experience of any user within that market. Because any market has winners, losers, strugglers, people succeeding at any given time. But what we're seeing is that Meta spend, and I expect this to be reflected in their earnings calls coming up, is that the spend is up dramatically in this platform, 40% year over year, with only a 3% reduction in efficiency. Like, if any of us could sort of be given that choice to say, hey, if you just could right now grab next month, you're going to be plus 40% in spend and flat to efficiency, you would take that immediately. That would be categorized as like remarkably successful performance. And at an aggregate level, that's what's there. Now, to the point, if new customer revenue is a smaller percentage of that than that 40%, then either that spend is being distributed to existing customers in a way, or that new customer acquisition isn't possibly as efficient as the overall ROAS might be presenting. And so that's worth unpacking. And there's a hypothesis I have around ASC and the way that that's sort of structurally setting up, that Meta is trying to grab more of the existing customer revenue. There's also businesses maturing. There's a lot in that pot, but it is worth acknowledging and pointing out, something to keep an eye on as we go forward. But Yarden, what do you make of TikTok? Like, so set aside the Meta thing for a second and just go CPM plus 54%. That's a huge number. Spend down 32%. What is happening on TikTok?
Well, look, first of all, I mean, I think we know and we get into some of this data, but TikTok's making some changes that they're pushing shops more and things like that. And, you know, it could be affecting it, but I think it's a year or a couple years now of efficiency. And efficiency, you know, TikTok is a channel that people haven't really figured out yet. There's a few that did, but like for the most part, they haven't figured it out. It's like an additional channel. It's hard to attribute it as it is today. So it's, you know, sometimes seen as brand spend and things like that. And so any of those channels are losing spend to Meta. I mean, even in these months where people are talking about, you know, problems in Meta, like Taylor talked about the spend, but it's not just the spend, it's the share of wallet. Like they're increasing share of wallet. And, you know, naturally when you increase share of wallet and you're increasing spend, like a lot of times you take spend from other places. And I think that that's what's been happening to TikTok in the past couple months. Now, that's worth saying, you know, this month in the D2C index, we did analysis of TikTok shops versus Meta shops. Taylor, with your permission, I think it makes sense to talk about that here.
Yeah, I did want to tease. I do want to save a little bit of this for people to go check out because I think it is really interesting. But it is worth noting that I think TikTok Shops is a growing and impactful arena where maybe some of that value of TikTok is shifting from out of the ad product on a direct response basis to maybe we're seeing that TikTok's emphasis and direction is moving more towards Amazon competitor, Shopify competitor than Meta advertising competitor. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah. I won't get into like all the data. I think it's really interesting, but my point was similar to yours that I actually I'm not very bearish on TikTok. I mean, because on the one hand, spend is down year over year, but on the other hand, there's a lot of other macro things that are going on that people are pushing to channels that they know and have already scaled and have already optimized. And TikTok is iterating and they're, you know, they really are on the cutting edge with a lot of these things. And with TikTok Shops, they're pushing to a different platform that's, you can track conversions a lot better and it's not going to be considered brand spend. And people are going there and people are increasing spend, albeit it's still, you know, it's still small, but just because it's the whole thing is down year over year, I think that they're seeing this data and they're figuring out a way around it. And I wouldn't bet against them necessarily.
Go ahead, Jeremiah.
One thing I think is really interesting is just looking at that ROAS up year over year on TikTok. And I think when you're talking about efficiency, this is a couple of years ago, there was extra money, right? And so people tested things not needing it to be efficient. And so now you've got people like really leaning into the efficiency side of it. But just again, to what you're saying, Yarden, I think seeing that like ROAS up year over year, that's a sign of that. Seeing the TikTok Shop growth is a sign of that. And again, to your point, Yarden, like closing that loop makes it so much easier to measure that and be certain of the efficiency. And I think that's one thing that's been really hard with, we don't really cover this data here, but like one of the number one question I actually asked on our platform is, how did you first hear about us? And we look at that data, that discovery data, and we compare it to the click data. And we do see that TikTok and YouTube have much lower percentage of respondents have a click associated to those channels versus something like a Meta or a Google. And I think that's part of that equation too, where there is different user behavior. It makes it hard to track. And ultimately, when people are in an efficiency mindset, that hard to track is going to impact spend. And again, to Yarden's point, the fact that TikTok is like really leaning into how do we combat that and build a platform that solves that problem is really smart. And so I think they've got a really good long-term future looking at it that way.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that we left our conversation being optimistic for e-commerce generally is that we saw consumer confidence rising. We saw platforms continuing to produce efficient demand creation on the advertising side. And we see the emergence of this, like we're calling it sort of the third place, right? Like Shopify, Amazon, and TikTok Shops really becoming another option to drive net new customer acquisition and transaction for brands in a way that's really is starting to emerge more and more in the zeitgeist. And so that's just hopeful. That continues to be a bunch of reasons why there's opportunity ahead. And so despite where we walked into the conversation together, I think we leave March feeling optimistic. We feel hopeful, maybe a bit of trepidation, and still we want to see some things play out. But maybe each of you could give me your sort of final sentiment of the state of the industry as we head out here. Where are you? I would put mine at cautiously optimistic, bordering on hopeful. Steve, where do you leave today?
I would say I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm probably a little more pessimistic than you. Really, I wonder if some of the confidence numbers here are impacted, you know, into April by consumer price index, like continued inflation. And we did see Easter happen earlier this year. So those Easter sales did occur in March rather than in April. So for brands that were using that moment. So we'll see what happens in April. We're certainly seeing, as we begin April, we've seen a little bit less spend on our part, a little bit lower than last year currently, but that might increase significantly with Mother's Day.
Okay. Yarden, where are you?
Yeah, I would say, I think I'm similar to you, Taylor, like cautiously optimistic, bordering optimistic. I think because for like, you know, I'm a numbers guy, the numbers are good. And, you know, there's something really healthy going on because it's a mix of the numbers are actually quite good and people are highly focused on efficiency and they just spent a year getting more efficient.
So like, yo, we're not an e-commerce company, but we got efficient in 2023. And I know that that really helped our business. You know, our we put our mind in things that were much more business focused, that much more important. So did, you know, many of these brands. And so they're coming out here with, they're putting up pretty good numbers and they're in a different mindset. They made a lot of changes in the past year. So if this holds, you know, they like this could start being an actually efficient market here. I hope. Now there's a lot of macro fears and things like that, and it's, you know, related to this. But if things hold and how the numbers are, it's a good thing.
I agree, Jeremiah.
Yeah, I would put myself at cautiously optimistic as well. When I think about this moment in time, things don't feel great. I think one, as a consumer, the one thing I'm thinking about right now is everything is so expensive. Like that's the only thing that gives me some hesitation here. Is that from the consumer side of things, everything is extremely expensive, even compared to a year ago. That said, if I look back at a year ago, the economy feels more stable now than it did a year ago, right? Like if I actually like put myself in that mindset of what early 2022 looked like. And to Yarden's point, we also spent all of 2022 focused on efficiency. Sorry, 2023. I'm off a year. And 2024 as well is going to be focused on efficiency. And so I think many of our customers are doing the same. And so I would also go with cautiously optimistic. I would say though, I want to see what the next 6 months look like. Like, do we continue in this trend or do we start to move back into feeling more uncertainty? But yeah, the numbers do look good. And I do feel like it's getting better.
Well, you know what's not too expensive, Jeremiah? The D2C Index. And right now, if you want to get in on the merch edition, go to d2cindex.com, sign up. It will be in inboxes here very shortly. And we would love feedback. We want to know what other data you want to see, what information would be helpful, whether the format is useful, whether you'd like more insights, more narrative, more raw numbers, more whatever the heck you want, let us know. We are here to serve you all. And again, I want to just put out into the world that we want to represent the broadest aggregate view of the industry we all exist in. No attempt to diminish any individual experience within the context of this. And we're hopeful that you all are killing it. We want to provide you the best insight into the places to help your business grow. So we appreciate you tuning in. D2Cindex.com, Jeremiah, Yarden, Steve, thank you all once again. And we'll talk soon.